On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Karl Rove says, no way. The GOP is hanging tough and is going to hang on to Congress in the midterms, says Rove. But almost everyone else outside the media tent thrown up to beat the drum on the White House lawn yesterday is talking about the wave. For 50 years, once or twice a decade, Americans have turned one party or the other out of Congress in droves. They did it when Vietnam became a quagmire. They did it after Watergate. They did it after Bill Clinton's rough start. Democrats hope and increasingly believe they're going to do it next week, especially in the House. Up next, On Point, we go to key battlegrounds for the House of Representatives in Connecticut, Colorado, Indiana, and Ohio, testing the midterm waters and the waves. Joining us this hour from New York is our old friend, reporter Walter Shapiro, who has been traveling across the country covering congressional races as Washington bureau chief for the online magazine Salon.com. He's author of One Car Caravan and a terrific listener to Real People and Politics. Walter Shapiro, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's always a pleasure.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, a no mean election watcher himself. You can see some of Jack's thoughts on this election, more on them at our website, onpointradio.org. Jack, great to have you with us.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Walter. Welcome back.
Walter, it's great to have you. Great to have you both. Walter, first to you, jump in with us at the top level here. What's going on? What is it that's got people, and at this point, not just Democrats, Karl Rove accepted, but got them talking about a wave here. What's the wave?
What is the wave? The wave is, number one, that the topic is dominant topic is Iraq, which benefits the Democrats, versus terrorism that benefits the Republicans. Number two, the Foley scandal is not necessarily playing that big outside of specific districts like Tom Reynolds' district right outside of Buffalo, but it contributes to a climate where the House Republican majority is seen as unresponsive, out of control, and out to feather their own nest, which is something like the mood regarding the Democrats before the Republican takeover of 1994.
And Jack Beatty, from that basic issue set, we've got a lot of political watchers looking out not just at the 15 seats that Democrats would need to pick up a majority, take a majority in the House, but people talking about 20, 25, 30, I mean, right on up. There's just some high enthusiasm running on the Democrat side, whatever Karl Rove may say.
Yes, and again, the war is the issue. On their side, the Republicans, I've been watching debates from around the country, it seems to me their main issue is Nancy Pelosi. And they're not decoy about where she's from. Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco. And if we don't get that point, John Hostetler out in Indiana will draw it for us. In one of his ads, he shows a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge suspended over an Indiana farm scene.
Those liberal Democrats are going to come and get you. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Yes, and now he's got a radio ad that talks about her plan to, quote, advance the homosexual agenda. Everywhere the Republican candidate I've seen has come out with that Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco code.
Except there's one problem with that, which is that most voters have, while they know what San Francisco is, most voters have no idea who Nancy Pelosi is, any more than the Democrats could have successfully run against Tom DeLay, as they hoped early this year, because they discovered most voters had no idea who Tom DeLay was, even though he was House Majority Whip at the time and quite in trouble with various indictments and other related legal matters.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there she is right on 60 Minutes, and the Republicans are certainly making her a big figure in the media tent yesterday on the White House lawn. And as you say, Jack, in ads across the country. Jack, what about the numbers? I mean, as we say, the opinion polls will soon be history. But right now, both Republicans and Democrats are paying a lot of attention to them, and they've got some pretty eyebrow-raising stats in there.
Yes, and one of the most eyebrow-raising one is the 20 to 23-point Democratic lead in the generic question. Which party do you want to lead the House? And that is just a very striking finding. And the second is that independents, who really will decide the election, are breaking, by some measures, 2-1 for Democrats. If those two things hold up, that wave, that is what increases the size of the wave. As more and more independents go to the Democrats, then Republican candidates in districts thought to be safe aren't safe any longer because the rising tide could sweep them up.
Walter, I mean, nobody wants to call it this close, but we've got even Republicans now and some quite prominent ones saying there's no way we're going to hold on to the House. Do you see the wave out there in terms of numbers? Is the 15-seat minimum for Democrats to take the majority here, does it looking inevitable at this point? And what about those bigger numbers? We thought the country was so gerrymandered and redistricted that it was hard to change it.
First of all, I'm somebody who had been privately saying to friends I thought the Democrats would nominate Mark Warner for president in 2008. So since Warner is not running,
chunks
I feel
salt.
Very humbled about making any sweeping predictions. Also, we're still, 13 days away from the election, and a lot can still happen. Even though it's harder for that, what happens to register? I would say that the odds certainly are above 60% that the Democrats will win those 15 states seats to take over the House. But it is nothing is inevitable. And while there may be a wave, I'm wondering if it's more of a regional wave focused on the Northeast. States like Connecticut, states like New York, where I've been spending my time, and wondering if there's something you might call the blue state backlash.
Maybe.
These states that have been consistently voting Democratic for president, even in bad years for the Democrats, have been electing a number of moderate Republicans to Congress. Chris Shays and Nancy Johnson in Connecticut as a perfect examples. And this may be the year that the people splitting their ticket, those ticket splitters who voted Kerry, say, Johnson in 2004, will now become straight Democratic voters, much like Republicans in the South who would be voting for Richard Nixon for president, say, and then voting for their local Democratic congressman eventually became straight Republican voters, which is why there are so few Democratic seats in the South.
We will test that thesis right across the country in Ohio and Indiana and Colorado. But you've very recently been, Walter, in Connecticut. We've got a little bit of tape from there. What are you hearing there? What do you see there in the Nancy Johnson case, in the Chris Shays case? These are Republican moderates of very long standing in the House of Representatives. How's it look for them?
Well, first of all, what I love is the race in northwestern Connecticut, the 5th Congressional District, between 71-year-old Nancy Johnson and her 33-year-old Democratic challenger, State Senator Chris Murphy. Because in this race, both candidates are running very good campaigns. So if this race is determined, and I think it'll be 3,000 votes one way or another, it will not be because of candidate error, but it will really reflect the mood of the Northeast.
Walter,
and right now,
I want to listen to them for just a second. Hold the thought.
Absolutely.
Let's get the sound of Nancy Johnson, Republican incumbent, and her Democratic challenger Chris Murphy in our ears. Here they are debating earlier this month the administration's wiretapping program. Here's an excerpt from that debate in New Britain.
The world has changed, in case you haven't noticed. The internet, cell phones. So we have to wiretap the group. And then when we do that, we can pick up the phone and we can catch those people who, after London, was thinking about trying to blow up 14 planes coming to America.
Here's the difference. If I was a member of Congress, I would be doing everything I could to reform that FISA law to make it work. If there are barriers to it working efficiently, then let's fix it. Let's not use it as an excuse to give an unchecked, unfettered ability to the President of the United States to wiretap, to intervene, and to do surveillance without any checks from the federal government.
Incumbent Nancy Johnson in trouble as a moderate, and Democrat challenger Chris Murphy there in a debate in New Britain, Connecticut. We've got a caller from New Britain. Let's go there to Jesse. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. What do you see, Jesse?
Well, I'm walking down a street in New Britain, Connecticut right now. And it's just, you know, this is, as you were saying a moment ago, Nancy Johnson's been here for 24 years. This is what has always been a safe Republican district. And so people aren't used to, you know, competitive races. And the funny thing about sort of this wave you're talking about, the backlash, it doesn't seem to be any one single issue. You know, it's partly Iraq, it's partly Foley, it's partly, you know.
And what does it all add up to, Jesse? What does it all mount up to?
It all adds up to just a sense of dissatisfaction that, you know, it's no one thing, that Republican control of Congress is generally not up to snuff. And that it's almost not that people just, you know, point to one thing they're furious about, whether it's Medicare, Part D, or Iraq. There's this general sense of malaise that you've got all three branches of Congress controlled by one party.
Does it come with a throw-the-bums-out coda attached?
Yeah, and also just, you know, sort of that civically we would benefit from having, you know, another party in control of one part of the federal government.
So there's a kind of moderate view of what could end up being a wave. Jesse, thanks for your call from Connecticut. Walter Shapiro, is that it? Is it people saying we just need balance here?
I think that's some of the certainly some of it. I thought Jesse, the caller, pretty much hit the nail on the head. What's really interesting to me, though, is Nancy Johnson is running blistering campaign commercials against Chris Murphy.
Not sounding so moderate right now.
Yeah, including one taking off that debate transcript that you ran that starts out, a known terrorist places a call from Pakistan to New York City. A terrorist plot may be in progress. And goes on in that vein. Chris Murphy would wait 72 years to intercept the call while Nancy Johnson would be on the case immediately.
We've been joined by Walter Shapiro. He's Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com. Jack Beatty's with us. Jack, we're going to march right across the country. Walter Shapiro says, look at this blue northeast, but there's all kinds of rumblings when you get further west as well. Indiana, just about as Republican turf as you can find, and we've got stuff happening right there.
Three vulnerable Republicans, and one of the blogs today notes that the Republican National Congressional Campaign Committee seems to have shut down ads for these three candidates, as if conceding these races. I don't know whether that's so or not. That was just an early report looking at analyzing the money. But there are three candidates in serious trouble out there.
Let's go straight to the Indiana front. Mary Hartnett joins us from Indianapolis. She's news director at NPR member station WFYI. Mary, it's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome.
Tell us about the races in play. How close are they? How's it look right now?
Well, I believe that you were talking about the Hostetler versus Brad Ellsworth race. John Hostetler is the incumbent in that office, and again, correctly on that blog, it was stated that the money had been shut off to Mr. Hostetler, but he's saying that is not the case. He's facing off against Brad Ellsworth, and Mr. Hostetler is running a fairly aggressive campaign. He's kind of staying away from the whole Bush agenda. He hasn't been identifying himself that much with President Bush as opposed to some of the other candidates. Mr. Ellsworth, he is the sheriff of Vandenberg County, and he, oddly, and this is actually is kind of unusual, he and the other two candidates, Democratic candidates, are running as rather conservative Democrats, talking about their faith in God, talking about their record in, you know, upholding the law and in the sanctity of marriage. And so there's been a lot of talk about the campaigns being, you know, quite middle of the road to slightly to the right, which is kind of unusual.
A kind of mind meld in the middle there, though of course, Hostetler has been often described as an extreme conservative, on the record saying Democrats demonize Christians, of course, famously arrested for heading into an airport with a loaded 9mm pistol in his briefcase a while back. Whoops.
Yeah, he said he didn't realize that it was there. There was some.
You know how 9mm pistols are. They fall out of our pockets everywhere. Let's listen to these two. We've got some tape from them, Mary. Here is Republican incumbent John Hostetler in the opening remarks of a debate from Indiana's 8th District earlier this month. Here's an excerpt of his comments.
Liberals from all over the country want Brad Ellsworth in the United States House of Representatives for one vote and one vote only, and that is for the Speaker of the House. The Speaker of the House will put in place committee chairmen that will lead committees so far to the left that I think ultimately the American people will not be able to recognize the institution that was the House of Representatives.
There's Republican incumbent John Hostetler in Indiana waving the fear factor flag around the Democratic Party. Here's his challenger, Brad Ellsworth, responding later in the debate.
Nancy Pelosi, I heard his name mentioned always by my opponent. That may be that he knows her better than I do after working 12 years with her and voting with her 2,600 times on like votes 2,600 times. I've not voted with her once. And when we talk about the leadership in Congress, Tom DeLay, is that something we're proud of, our leadership there, who's gone in shame?
Mary Hartnett in Indianapolis, how is fear of the Democrats playing as a get-out-the-vote issue for the Republicans at this point?
Well, I think it's definitely playing to some extent because this Nancy Pelosi issue has been raised in all three races. Definitely she's a symbol of liberalism here in Indiana, and this is a fairly conservative place to live. I've lived here a year and a half, and it definitely is a red state. And interestingly, Ms. Pelosi has given to all three campaigns, but none of the candidates has talked about her very much. Now, in the Mike Sodrel Barron Hill race, Barron Hill has been a little more talkative about Ms. Pelosi. Mike Sodrel has gotten a lot of support from the Republican Party. President Bush has been here several times. He's going to be here again Saturday. Laura Bush is here today, once again stumping for Mike Sodrel. And, you know, it is interesting to see the kind of people that come up in these races and the kinds of references that people use. And I think this liberal issue really does play here very well.
Mary, what about the Iraq War? I'm reading here Brian Vargas at Indiana University quoted saying that Hoosiers' patriotism is kind of offended by how badly the Iraq War is going. They believe in the efficiency of the American military. If it's not going well, somebody's not leading it right. Does that have traction there?
Yes, it really does. A lot of military involvement in Indiana, a lot of young men fighting in Iraq. It seems like every other week another soldier comes back, you know, to be buried here, and it always makes the papers. There is definitely support for the president. There's a lot of concern about people, young people dying for no reason, sons of Indiana, daughters of Indiana being there for no reason, and I do think that's having an effect here.
Walter,
can
yes, please.
For a second?
Oh, Jack, please.
Mary, we read about the problems that these congressional candidates are having almost as a backlash from feelings about the governor, Mitch Daniels. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Governor Daniels has had a kind of a rough year. He signed off on a deal to lease the Indiana Toll Road. It's a $4 billion deal that has caused a lot of controversy. People up north in the Chris Shikola race, Joe Donnelly race up there, that's in South Bend. There was a lot of opposition to that deal, even though it's a state issue, and obviously Chris Shikola had nothing to do with making that happen. Some say he's really going to suffer for that, and his association with Governor Daniels. Governor Daniels also was a big supporter of, you know, the changing to daylight saving time, which in Indiana, it was one a big holdout from daylight saving time for many, many years. And again, that's another Northwest Indiana issue up there. A lot of counties are still on Central Time and don't want to be on daylight saving time. Mm. So those issues have really affected Chris Shikola, even though it was really the state legislature and state Republicans that made those happen and went along with the governor.
So, Mary, here we are under 2 weeks now. All three of these still in the gun sights of Democrats. Could Republicans lose all three, or is the GOP thinking it's grabbing some back?
Well, it looks like Mr. Shikola is still... he has a slight lead, a decent lead up in the 2nd District. And when it comes to the bloody, quote-unquote, the bloody 8th district, because it seems like people fight so hard to win that district, two different polls say it leans Democratic. One or two others say it's a toss-up. The 9th district seems like it's more of a toss-up. That's the Mike Sodrel district.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does seem like the 8th district, as has been talked about all over the country, it is the most up-in-the-air race, and it's the race people are really looking at with a lot of interest. So everybody here is there's so much interest and a real sense of excitement that Indiana is going to have something to say about what happens in the country, not only because of this race, but because all three of these Republicans are on important committees.
boards.
Congressional committees, and they have a lot to say about bringing home money and services to Indiana. So if they leave, a lot of Republicans are saying, you know, we're going to lose this power.
So color this state very much in the toss-up category. That can't be a comfortable feeling for the GOP. Democrats with big hopes there. We'll see Mary Hartnett at WFYI in Indianapolis. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Let's hear from another I state in the Midwest. Joe's calling from Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Yes. I just want to make two comments, and I'll listen to your responses.
Yeah.
One is that local election for Congressman Braley is a Democrat and Whalen is a Republican. They both have really tried to make their issues local. However, the National Republican Party have just slammed our TVs with nasty ads linking Braley to Communist Party and just some untrue ads that people have been calling him on it. And that's really hurting Whalen big time simply because of the National Republican Party is involved.
So you've got Republican Mike Whalen up against Democrat Bruce Braley, and you think that the national level ads are working for the Democrat in this case.
Exactly. I mean, the more the Republicans advertise on TV, the National Republican Party, the more people are going towards Braley. I happen to be a Democrat. I've supported him all along. The other point I want to make is I wanted to really give Whalen a chance. I wanted to go to some of the rallies he held.
Yeah.
However, every rally they held was closed doors. It was by invitation only.
Wow. So, no kidding. I don't know the facts on that, but we see your experience of it. Joe, thanks for calling. Walter Shapiro, what about this issue? Joe raises it of the national message. This time, Tip O'Neill said all politics is local. Is that true this time? And whose national message appears to be playing better where?
Well, I think this is an election that is both national and, as is pointed out in terms of Indiana, with daylight savings time, that pivotal national issue, it is also aggressively local.
Yeah.
There's also an interesting distinction that in Connecticut, it's three Republican incumbents who can lose.
Mm.
In Indiana, it is three Republican incumbents can lose.
Right.
Yeah, the last caller from Iowa's 1st District,
yep.
Davenport,
mm-hmm.
that is a Republican-held seat, but it is a Republican seat that the Republican incumbent has abandoned to run for governor of Iowa.
Jim Nussle,
and
yeah.
traditionally, in off-year elections, it is easier for a party to pick up open seats like Iowa's 1st than it is to knock off incumbents. So when you have two states, Connecticut and Indiana, with six imperiled Republican incumbents, it says a lot about the political climate.
Let's go way west to see how these issues are playing out, national messages and local issues. Karen Crummy joins us from Denver. She's political reporter for the Denver Post. Karen, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
So you've got what's turned into a rather purple state out there. What are your big races? What's in play?
There's a few. The big one is there's an open seat in the 7th District, House seat, and it's wide open. A lot of money's been coming in, and the person who held it, Bob Beaupre, is actually running for governor. So, you know, it's a real test on how both national and local politics are playing out in Colorado.
How do things look to be breaking at this point?
Right now, the Democrat, who is Ed Perlmutter, is ahead by, you know, latest polls, maybe 3 to 4 points. That's it. The Republican's Rick O'Donnell. And a lot of the issues, you know, the war in Iraq, Social Security, stem cell research, they're all being talked about in this district that is a rarity in the country because it's split about one-third Democrat, one-third Republican, and one-third unaffiliated.
And at this point, independents in Colorado, a powerful group there. What's it look like?
Independents in Colorado make up almost a third of the electorate at this point. And that is really going to be the test. I mean, in some ways, Colorado is a bellwether because it looks like the unaffiliateds are breaking more Democrat overall, and I think in every race right now. But, you know, you just don't know until that day. I mean, I think in the 7th race, they are breaking towards the Democrat. And again, it's because of a lot of these national issues that are playing out.
We want to hear the sound of these local races and how national issues are being portrayed there. Here we've got a clip from the Democratic challenger, Ed Perlmutter, attacking Republican incumbent Rick O'Donnell on what's happening in Iraq. This is an excerpt from a debate last month in Aurora, Colorado, Colorado's 7th District.
Well, I can tell you that Mr. O'Donnell, in his announcement speech, had a couple thousand words in his speech. And at that time, we had about 2,300 people who had died in Iraq. Not one word mentioned Iraq. on his acceptance speech on his nomination. He had 1,000 words, not one word on Iraq. Not one word on Iraq in his website until after the primary, when I challenged him on the very most important issue facing America today. That's the first time he addressed it.
And final thought on it. Sure.
In my announcement speech, I talked about the war on terror. In my acceptance speech, I talked about the war on terror. While my opponent was busy fighting his primary, I've been knocking on thousands and thousands of doors in this district talking about protecting America from terrorism.
Karen, what's your sense of how the war's playing? There's Ed Perlmutter going after Rick O'Donnell, Rick O'Donnell pushing back with war on terror, not war in Iraq.
Right.
Who's it working for, against?
Right now, I think it's working more for Ed Perlmutter, primarily because Rick O'Donnell was put in a really tough position a few months ago with, you know, the president was here fundraising for him. He's had to kind of distance himself, but not too much. So it was only about 3 weeks ago, I think, where Rick O'Donnell came out and started saying things like the war is a failure of leadership, which was actually pretty shocking that he had come out and said that. So it's only been the last few weeks where he's really entertained the war on that level, whereas Ed Perlmutter has been in the position to just hammer it day in, day out. It's not being handled right. We need to set a timetable to get out, things of that nature.
Let's take a call from Conyers City, South Carolina. Mike's on the line. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. What do you see?
Oh, well, I travel the country all the time. I am a truck driver. When I first started discussing Bush and everything back in 2000, you know, everybody was all pro-Bush, pro-this, pro-that.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed a whole bunch. Nobody wants him no more, and nobody wants anything to do with these guys.
Why? What do you think has turned it around in what you're hearing, Mike?
Well, everything that I hear, because I hear it all over the country. I'm from one end of the country all the time, and every time we sit down at a restaurant and talk, a debate breaks out amongst a whole bunch of us. And the main sentiment is that all our rights have pretty much been taken away. If you really look at it, they've done that. I mean, they claim that to protect us, they need to take our rights. I'll tell you what, nobody's going to protect you from someone beating you up in your own front yard. The only person going to protect you is you. And, you know, we have that argument about that all the time. And I said, the government failed us in 9/11, so now they want to say they can protect us now. If we just give up everything we have, we can't do that. And that's the argument that goes back and forth.
Mike, we've got it. Drive safe there in your truck. Walter Shapiro, how about it? There's a kind of conservative rights argument, but this time turned against the GOP or George Bush.
One of the interesting districts, and as somebody who's glibly said phrases like Connecticut 5, Ohio 15, as if I'm a tobacco auctioneer about prize lots, suddenly I cannot remember the district number. But it is the district in Idaho represented by a total libertarian, a Republican by the name of Butch Otter, who is giving up the seat to run for governor. And it is a situation where there is enough of a libertarian feeling in Idaho about rights being lost that in this reddest of all states, there is a remote conceivable glimmer of a chance that a Democrat could win.
Walter Shapiro, Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com, is with us this hour. Jack Beatty's here. Rachel's calling from Milan, Illinois. Hi, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You're saying all the spin in the media is Republicans have a potential of losing control. And I want to know which candidate actually benefits from this information being out in the media before the election. Does it help the Republicans or does it help the Democrats? Remember in the 2004 election when the media announced that Al Gore won Florida and what happened after that. So who actually benefits from this?
So getting inside the dynamic, I mean, you say spin, of course, we've got opinion polls here and then maybe they're spun or not spun. It's a political season, I'm sure they are. But if those polls aren't looking great for the GOP, and if there's a lot of talk about that, Walter Shapiro, first to you, Rachel wants to kind of second-guess the whole thing here. Who does that help? Does it get the GOP, you know, sort of rescue team to come out and pull out the base and flip the whole thing back the other way, or does it build a wave for Democrats?
Well, I think to some extent some of us are actually out there trying to figure out what is going to happen so we avoid being embarrassed about what we write and it being out of connection with the reality that will be in the hands of the voters in less than 2 weeks.
But polls are polls. Opinion polls are there, and people are citing them, and they don't look good for the GOP on the face of them. So who do you think that helps?
Well, first of all, I have some suspicion about national polls trying to be a guide to individual House races. Mm-hmm. Secondly of all, the polling done for individual House races, the public polling, is generally small sample polls if reliable polls exist. Senate races are much better polled than House races. That said, there is a real question of, are we into motivating the respective bases? In which case, Republican fear of losing the House could help the Republicans get more turnout. In the same way, the Democrats, as uncharacteristic a position as it is for them, may be vulnerable to a little complacency. But I sort of resent the idea that those of us who cover politics and who are traveling the country to try to figure out what's happening are there to posit an agenda that will somehow influence the outcome of voting. One of the best indications of where the mood is where both national parties are spending their money. Roughly right now, and this is according to information provided, public information provided by both parties, the Democrats are spending money nationally to go after about 35 vulnerable Republicans and defend about four of their seats. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are trying to defend about 35 seats and go after about four Democrats. So in terms of where they're spending their money, which is an indication of what the best polls are in the Republican and Democratic parties, the Republicans are playing defense and the Democrats are on the offense. And that tells me more than a generic ballot, horse race polls, or anything else.
Jack, I want to hear you on this as well, but I've got another question on polls from Sheila in Newton, Massachusetts. Let me take that first. Sheila, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I heard an interview on NPR last night with Karl Rove, and Mr. Rove said that his polls, which he said were much more extensive and inclusive, apparently, than the ones that were being cited by the interviewer, showed that the Republicans had, you know, a much better chance than what's commonly being said in the media. Now, I know the Republicans have a machine. I personally am afraid that that machine is called Diebold. But what I wonder is, where does Mr. Rove get these polls that he's citing? Who pays for them? And are they legitimate?
Right. Can real serious polls be saying really different things all at the same time? Sheila, thanks for that. Jack, how about it? We saw or heard White House staffers on the White House lawn in a big media tent yesterday talking with radio all over the place, including NPR last night. And yes, you probably heard it. I heard it too. Karl Rove saying, hey, our polls show something very different here. How do you read that? And what about, I mean, the issues come first, we hope, but then there is the issue of who's fired up, and, you know, this kind of pregame reporting can influence that. How do you read this question, Jeff?
Well, I think that with Rove, that's just complete spin. I mean, obviously, if he had the polls, he'd cite the numbers. In any case, they'd be internal Republican polls. So that's just spin. You know, I really think there is a factor. I can't prove it by empirical research, but I suspect there's a factor in American politics of wanting to vote for the winner. I don't know, you know, that's just the way it is.
And
I think
human nature.
I think the more people say the Democrats are going to win, that at the margins will discourage some Republicans. And also there's something's going on among Republicans. Fully 35, nearly to 40% of conservatives, you know, are down on this war. Conservatives. You know, there's a real feeling here that, and then on the other side, we know that people on the religious right have been complaining that the Republicans aren't paying attention to them and that they're demotivated. In Ohio especially, that's the case. So, these polls do affect the psychological weather, but I don't think decisively.
Let's turn to Ohio and see what we can learn there. Bill Cohen joins us from Columbus, Ohio. He's a reporter at the Ohio Public Radio and Public Television State House News Bureau there. Bill, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So here you've got the bellwether state, the one that has decided so much in American political history. What's the big picture as you look across the state with just a week plus now to the midterms? How's it look?
Well, you're talking about these 15 key races around the country, and at least three of them or more are right here in Ohio. And as you've been talking about, it looks like the Democrats really have the momentum here. We've got three races here. There's one here in central Ohio, which is fascinating because it features the number four Republican leader in the U.S. House. That's Deborah Price.
Mm.
And she's the highest-ranking female congresswoman ever in the majority party. And in past races, she has barely had much competition. But this time, she's fighting for her political life. One thing about this district she's in, we used to think it was a Republican district.
Mm.
But the last time, it went 50-50, Bush-Kerry. So Deborah Price now has a major challenger, Mary Jo Kilroy, the county commissioner, and Kilroy seems to have the momentum right now.
Bill, let us listen to those two. We've got some tape here of the Democratic challenger, Mary Jo Kilroy, and Republican incumbent Deborah Price, as you say, in Ohio's 15th district, here talking about Medicare. Here's an excerpt from a debate last week in Columbus.
She says she does the right thing. Was it the right thing to pass a Medicare Part D bill that prohibited the Medicare from negotiating with drug companies? That has cost seniors, cost our country, cost our taxpayers millions of dollars. And with that money, we could have filled the donut hole that many seniors are going to get stuck in. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kilroy. Ms. Price, 30 seconds to rebut.
Medicare Part D is one of the best things that's ever happened to seniors in this country. I hope we get another question on it. If not, I'd like to debate you on the sidewalk outside, Ms. Kilroy.
I've never heard quite that much enthusiasm for Medicare Part D before, Bill Cohen. But what about it? I mean, Deborah Price still sounds big and bold in the tape there. What are the polls showing in the home stretch here?
Well, I haven't really seen many polls, but I think the indications we're getting are that Kilroy is surging in that race. And the fact that Deborah Price, who had been comfortable in past races, has had to go on the attack and is actually airing TV attack ads against Kilroy for what Kilroy used to do on the Columbus Board of Education, for example, years ago, I think is a sign that Deborah Price's handlers think she is in trouble.
Now, the Foley scandal touched her, and other scandals have hit Ohio. Walk us through a couple of those, if you would, Bill, and how serious is the scandal problem?
Well, one reason is because just as that Foley scandal hit the headlines, there was a magazine article in which Deborah Price was asked, well, who are your best friends in Congress? And she said, among them, Foley. And that was really a
my buddy shot. Mark Foley, and the next thing you know, he's the bugaboo.
Yeah. So that really hurt. Scandal has also played a big role in another big race in Ohio, in eastern Ohio, the Appalachian area, where Bob Ney had to drop his reelection plans after being found guilty in the Jack Abramoff scandal. And so Republicans have put up a state senator, Joy Padgett, to replace him on the ballot. But she was somewhat tight with Ney himself. In fact, Ney himself recommended that Padgett be his replacement. So that didn't, in some quarters, that doesn't make Padgett look good because of Ney's bad reputation these days.
Bill, what about the issues, Iraq, economy? I saw polling numbers where dissatisfaction in Ohio was much higher. People's priority was much greater on the economy than the war in Iraq, which was just down around 12% as a hot issue for people. How's the economy playing in your state?
Well, the economy would play heavily, perhaps more heavily in Ohio than other states, because at least the perception is Ohio's economy is flat. It's about not quite a full percentage point above the national average, I think seven-tenths of a point above the national average. And we're losing population relative to other states. I mean, we're not losing population totally, but relative to other states, we are losing population. And there's just a sense we've lost more than 200,000 jobs in the last several years. Again, that's another black eye on the Republicans, because they've been in power, not just on the federal level, but they rule all three branches of state government here in Ohio. So there's a sense that Republicans have kind of overworn their welcome. And Ohioans generally, after a few years of one-party rule, our history is we usually say, let's give the other guys a chance.
We've heard a lot of debate. Let's hear an ad for a second here and get your feedback, Bill. This is Democratic challenger John Cranley in an ad attacking Republican incumbent Steve Chabot in Ohio's 15th district.
I'm John Cranley, and I approve this message.
Hello, this is Congressman Steve Chabot. If you would like to leave a message, we'll get back to you as soon as possible.
Shabby, W here.
wanted to thank you for voting for my agenda 92% of the time. Appreciate you supporting my plan to privatize Social Security. Loved your vote for those oil company tax breaks. And thanks for not asking any pesky questions about Iraq. Steve, I know I can always count on you. Gotta go. Bye now.
Okay, there's a sense of humor, but it's got an edge to it. Steve Chabot came in the 1994 Republican wave. What about it this time, Bill Cohen? How's George W. Bush playing?
Well, Bush isn't playing real well in Ohio. He's really down in the polls in Ohio and nationally, and that's why you'll see Bush come into Ohio and raise money for people like Deborah Price, but he doesn't wind up in public appearances. And I guess if I were a Republican candidate for Congress, I wouldn't particularly want to be, you know, seen, you know, with hands held high with the president these days either. So Bush is coming in to raise money for these folks, but he's not making public appearances.
Bill Cohen with the Ohio Public Radio and Public Television State House News Bureau in Columbus. Bill, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's get a call from Steve in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks. I'm interested in hearing your two commentators talk a bit more about this issue of some of the, I would argue, over-the-top racial, primarily, in some cases, gender tactics that are going on, particularly this Harold Ford race in Tennessee, where clearly right out of the, it's not the Karl Rove playbook, it's the Lee Atwater playbook, the M.O. of when in desperation pull out the race card the same way that Helms did a number of years ago.
Now, this is the ad. I think I've seen a bit of it where you've got, among other things, a kind of a white blonde woman saying, you know, Harold, come back to the Playboy Club, sort of raising the black-white sexuality race issue.
Silly, although it's a governor's race, it has done in Massachusetts with the white woman in the parking garage, attractive, and then the cut to the black you know, alleged rapist and so forth.
In the Deval Patrick race there, Walter Shapiro, how about it? The real down and dirty stuff in the last weeks, are you seeing it?
Well, I'm seeing it, but again, I mean, it is much more of a 21st century model, which is very few ads in House races about crime, very few ads in House races with any racial overtones like affirmative action, they're trying to take your jobs. And it is much more back to the old basic Republican basics where they're attacking. It's terrorism, it's taxes, it's liberal. But a lot of this, what is happening beneath the radar scope in terms of robocalling, in terms of leaflet distribution, it is possible that there is some of this that is happening, and we're just not seeing it in TV ads.
Walter, you're a good listener, and you're out there. What about conservatives this time? How do you hear them sort of ruminating, thinking through Iraq, all the challenges we're looking at, and this GOP? Do you feel enthusiasm? Do you, do you really feel alienation on the ground?
Well, I think on the ground, I think there is going to be some conservatives who are bad-mouthing the Republicans right now who will still hold their nose and vote for the Republican congressional candidate. It should be mentioned the Republicans have an awesome turnout model, their 72-hour program that has, in the last three elections, has done great at getting their vote to the polls. That said, there is a real conservative disenchantment with the direction of this administration on everything, on everything from immigration to the fact that no matter how you feel about whether we should have gone into Iraq, it's very hard to argue that we have pursued the war competently. So it's all of these things which undermine the base. And it's also conservatives have been in that habit of controlling Congress for the last 12 years. When you're in power too long, you get a little to take it granted for it. You get a little complacent. And it is quite possibly that the Democratic base this time out, unlike in years past, may be hungrier than their counterparts in the Republican Party.
Jack Beatty, last word goes to you. Do you see the wave coming?
I don't know. I mean, it's what's happening with the independent vote that I think is critical. If those independent voters stay over on the Democratic side, if they're not discouraged by the negative ads, and they often are, then that's what makes a wave. The other thing that makes it is if the Democrats turn out, and polls are showing they're motivated, more motivated than the Republicans.
Well, it's hot out there. We're very grateful to both of you for being with us. You can get more of Jack's election analysis right now at onpointradio.org, and I encourage you to check it out. Jack, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Walter Shapiro, Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com. Walter, stay out there on the road for us, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, and on to Indiana for me.
On we go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.